Welcome, everyone, to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. Today, we have a super interesting guest, Kristen Orlowski. Kristen, you are currently the SVP Chief People Officer. You are, in the past, you've been with Toys R Us. You've been with the University of Michigan, helped bring in new head coaches to one of the country's best football programs, and a little bit about people management. You actually came from a very small town. You cut your teeth in politics in college and learned how to be very competitive and come out on top and win. I think that's going to help us today in the conversation. But if you wouldn't mind, before we get started, and the conversation is going to be all about how do we build high-performing teams without high salaries? So that's interesting. But before we get into that, maybe you could explain a little bit more about your background.
Sure. Thank you, Steve. And it's terrific to be here and appreciate the opportunity to share my perspectives and insights. As you mentioned, I have had the opportunity to work for some pretty remarkable organizations throughout the course of my HR career. And what I've found in each of those organizations, there are some pretty powerful ways in which you can motivate people, drive them for the best performance. I had the opportunity, as you mentioned, to work for Toys R Us, an incredibly challenging time during the business. So being able to witness those who had great resilience during that period and were able to power through some just really challenging trials and tribulations. The University of Michigan, I think, really taught me everything about teamwork and how incredibly important that is in being able to work alongside and with some amazing coaches, just with high expectations, highly competitive, and the joy that it brings when you can work in that environment. And then I've had the opportunity to work in a government setting, in manufacturing, and most recently at Caliber Scientific. And so it's been a great journey to date.
Throughout all of that, one of the things that you said you've consistently learned and applied is your passion for creating company culture. And company culture that not only helps retain, attract good people, but back to our title, it actually is something that's so important. People want to work at a company, even if they're not making the top dollar, where they feel comfortable. They feel like they fit in. So tell us a little bit just in general about your passion for culture and why you think it's so important.
Thank you, Steve. That's a great question. So when I was working at the University of Michigan athletic department, my leader at the time had a mandate to really transform the culture of that organization, which in turn, as the top chief talent officer for that organization, was my responsibility to drive that initiative and objective. And I think one of the things that you must do as a leader immediately is really assess your workforce and assess who are the right people to have on the team. Those who have the right capabilities and competencies, those who have the right behaviors and attitudes. And there may be some team members that need support with shoring up some skill sets and some developmental opportunities and invest in those people that have the right attitudes and the right behaviors. But quickly identify those team members who, for whatever reason, may not align with the vision of the company culture, the mission, the goals, objectives, and do not demonstrate those behaviors that will make the team successful and the organization successful. So I think selection is incredibly important. The idea around passion for culture, I was able to witness and see a transformation from a culture that was very bureaucratic, complacent, didn't challenge the status quo, didn't really have that entrepreneurial spirit, and didn't have clarity on what is it that we're doing and why is it so incredibly important. And from that experience, I was able to see what it looks like when you set forth a very clear vision, you invite people to join you on that mission and vision and the path. You provide clarity so they can see that pathway. And certainly you want to provide incentives along the way to reward people and to celebrate those wins. And that was maybe the experience where I really took away what developing a strong culture is all about. And I've been able to bring that to other organizations I've been a part of.
So this idea of a strong culture, I'm going to flip it 180 degrees and tell you, if you took away today your strong culture that you've built, what would happen? Tell us, what house of cards is there? Like, what would fall apart? What would not happen that is happening today?
Another great question, Steve. When you don't have that strong culture, you have confusion, lots of chaos. You start to see finger pointing. So when things aren't going according to plan and things don't ever go according to plan, who can we point the finger at? Who made the mistake? A general sense of apathy, a sense within the organization, I'm powerless. I don't have control. I can't influence my peers, my direct reports, my leadership. From the technical standpoint, high turnover, high attrition. It's terrible for employment branding because candidates are very savvy today, and they will ask questions about the organization. They are smart to go into the organization and ask people what it's truly like to work for that company. And so from an employment branding or PR perspective, it's awful. And then I guess the last thing, and there's such a full list, but I would say wellness in general. So you start to see a spike in leaves of absences, sickness, continued kind of time off, and you start to see that trend pick up as well.
So, I mean, everything you're saying makes so much sense, but sometimes culture can be put right up there with vision and mission and core values, that they're on a plaque on the wall or they're up on a page on the website. The box has been checked. We've done that, and nobody could recite it. Even senior leadership couldn't say, if you ask each of them individually, what is our company culture and how do we perpetuate that? You'd get 8 different answers. Listening to you, and it makes so much sense, that this seems like it's one of the most vital things that we should be working on as a company. Why do you think that it's not? Why do you think most companies don't have as much of a focus on the company culture as you do?
I'll answer that in 2 parts. I think we are business. Organizations are businesses. They exist to produce revenue and EBITDA and profit. So we get very focused on the transactional part of the business. It's not a bad thing. I'm passing judgment, but that's where the focus seems to veer. And one of the partners that we work with at Caliber Scientific, they have done 30 years of research and thousands of companies and organizations that they've worked with, and they benchmark culture. And what they found is that over time, and it's not overnight, it's not, you can't flip a switch. It takes consistent effort, but you can actually see the trend between those organizations that have, as measured by employees, their feedback and input, that have high performing cultures equate to actually high performing companies from a revenue standpoint, from EBITDA. But again, I think people are very impatient and they want immediate results. And so it's sometimes easier to focus on the transactional as opposed to maybe investing as much time and energy into the culture side, which has long-term returns, but you do have to be consistent about it. You have to be intentional around it. I'm really proud of the work of our Caliber People and Culture team, which has, based on our culture results, has put together very focused action plans throughout our company, specifically on culture. So team members are designing and coming up with areas of focus on culture, and they're a part of it. It's not a top-down approach. It's a bottoms-up approach.
That's interesting, because a lot of people talk about culture as it's not really defined by senior leadership. It's defined by the people. And you can take those actions and you can help push it in the right direction. But in the end, it's the people that create the culture. If you could, what are the tips, the tricks, the strategies for creating a high-performance culture? You've done it over and over again.
That's a large question. I think number one, you need to have, and I've been fortunate to be part of organizations that have leadership that understand the importance of a high-performing culture and that it's a objective or initiative that needs to be supported at the top. So if you do not have your CEO, your CFO, your C-suite in alignment, then I would actually advise you don't maybe fuel your efforts in a different direction. So you need to have that, number one. Number two, I think you need to actually survey and really find out what do people really think about the culture. And there's all sorts of tools and vendors, and I've worked with several that I think highly of. But that's the kind of the first piece, because until you get that data and information, you're just grabbing at straws without that information. Once you have that information and that employee feedback, you better darn act on it. And we made it really clear with our team members, both in my experience at Michigan, even at Toys R Us, and also at Caliber Scientific, we are going to share this information with you. We're going to be very transparent. We will share with you the good, the bad, and everything in between. That you're taking that time to share what you really think and feel, where we're getting things right and wrong. We owe it to you to share that information. And then I think the next piece to that is, once you share that information, you have an obligation as the employer to act on it. Now, you can't act on all of it, but act on portions of it and show a commitment and demonstrate a commitment that you're serious about it and that you're committed to making improvements. Otherwise, if you go back and attempt to get feedback or measure culture in the future, everyone's going to say, no thanks, I'm not going to participate.
Here's what I love is the step one of going to senior management and getting their buy-in. And you use the business case. There's a business case to take to top executives and say, no, this is a bottom line growth strategy. Let's call it culture, but this is a growth strategy for the company. And then let's figure out what our company culture is and go out and do those surveys and be transparent and then act on it. I love every single bit of that. And in our previous conversations, you talked about, in terms of acting on it, you talked about the importance of carefully selecting team members based on skill sets and their attitudes and behaviors. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, absolutely. I learned this from a leader that I worked for, and I think his quote was, the most important decision a leader ever makes is who they hire. And I've taken that to heart. I'm a bit of a cynic in the sense that I don't believe all leaders believe that with the same level of intensity that I believe that. It's not about just putting warm bodies in positions. So when I go to hire for my team, or I'm invited to participate on a panel or individual interview for another position within the organization, I take it incredibly serious. The time that's spent, and it is time consuming, the time spent reviewing the credentials, the resume ahead of time, not just showing up, actually preparing questions in advance. We utilize a great, very short, quick assessment of candidates at Caliber Scientific. And when we have that feedback ahead of time, it gives me a little preview into the candidate's strengths and their natural tendencies, being able to craft questions around that. During that interview process, it's really important to me to understand not only their career trajectory and where they've been and why they've made the moves that they've made, but truly understanding how others have worked with them. So their credentials are absolutely important, but I want to understand, how do they work within a team? How do they work with leadership? How do they work with direct reports? How do they partner with customers, vendors, suppliers, et cetera? So the interview process, I think, is incredibly important. I think taking time to actually reflect on the candidates that you interviewed. For some, this might seem a little, quote, old school. I believe in reference checks. I honestly don't think a lot of employers complete reference checks, and not just reference checks that the candidate provides you with, oh, here are my three friends, but actual former supervisors, leaders, coworkers, and really taking time to have meaningful conversations with those individuals. So I think that's important. Of course, background checks. I really do believe hiring is the most important decision you make as a leader. And I've said this, and I don't say this in a braggy way. Every person I've hired for my team at Caliber Scientific has been the right person for the right position at the right time. No regret. So I feel very strongly that hiring and selection is incredibly important. And if every leader took it as seriously, and it does take time, it can be pretty exhausting. I think we would get the hires right the first time.
Within this recruiting process, in the due diligence and the time that you're taking, how do you assess how they will fit into your high performance culture? Because now we've talked about kind of two things that can be looked upon as separate, but as soon as they come into the organization, they're going to have an impact on that culture. Every employee does. So how do you mesh that up in this recruiting process?
I really share a very realistic preview of what a day in the life or the week in the life is at Caliber Scientific. My CEO even said to me during my interview process, he said, "Kristen, no 2 days are alike at all." He said to me, "What you think you're going to focus on or work on Monday, we're a completely different company by Friday." That was the most accurate preview of what I was about to jump into. And I was okay with that. I wasn't scared by that. I was actually intrigued and excited. And I like variety. And I definitely don't want to do exactly the same thing every day. Now, I do appreciate structure. Don't get me wrong. I like structure. I really provide and I encourage my peers and my colleagues and my team, which does the vast majority of the recruiting, tell the candidates what it's really like. Tell them about the realities of the systems we have or do not have in place. Be very transparent about how it's an amazing multicultural international company, 12 different countries, different languages. It's beautiful and it's very vibrant. It can also cause communication challenges and obstacles from that perspective. So I'm very transparent about that. I'm very transparent about the speed in which we work. We're a highly acquisitive business. So our founder and our business development folks are constantly acquiring new businesses. So it makes for a very rapid pace. In my company, if you're someone who likes routine, regular structure, this is not the place for you. And I will be very honest about that. So I think that's important.
Based on what you've just been saying, I think I have my most important question yet. This is, you're an international company. You work in 12 different countries that all have different cultures and the different way people communicate and relate to each other. You're acquiring companies, so you're acquiring different cultures and assimilating them into yours. You're hiring new outside talent. You've got three different forces that are pulling at a high-performance culture. How do you keep a high-performance culture, the reins on, and headed in the right direction when you have so many complex factors that are constantly in the fray?
I'll answer it locally and then think about it more globally. So locally, when I say locally, my people and culture team, we go through an offsite. We did this in October. We start looking at what do we need to plan for 2025. We have several different pillars. So we think about how do we support the business with revenue and growing the business. For us, that typically manifests as how do we lower risks within the organization. We have a pillar around that. We have quite a bit around how we are recruiting and retaining talent and the strategies in which we can recruit and retain talent. Leadership development is core for myself and my team. We want to invest in our top talent, not just our top talent, but we want to invest in as much of the organization as we can. You have to make some calls there. It's not an unlimited checkbook. And then we have a whole area around our processes, our policies,
our systems. So that time together, whether it's virtual or in person, and this year it was virtual, but we really map out where do we need to focus our efforts that enable the business to drive toward all of the business objectives that are critical for either this year or going into next year. That's kind of how my team approaches it. Our executive leadership team also sets out a strategic map. Each of our functional areas are represented, and usually one area received maybe more focus. So I think headed into 2025, there's going to be a great emphasis on customer and also on revenue and growth, but it doesn't always stay the same. You know, it kind of switches, but every area has representation. I believe strongly in very open, transparent communication. So my team and I are very locked in terms of we have a regular cadence that we're meeting for an hour and a half every 2 weeks, sometimes every week, but usually every 2 weeks. And we talk about where our wins are, what challenges we're having. And if we're seeing challenges in one region, it's likely that challenge may be popping up in a different region. Just that communication venue keeps us very closely tied together. So we can early on identify where we might have some challenges popping up, try and triage those proactively. But you're right. It's a challenge because you're skilling up, you're training your current core base of team members. And at the same time, you're bringing new people into the family. They may or may not want to be part of the family. They're still figuring it out. And we help support and facilitate that. In addition to those miscommunications that happen simply because it's a different language or a different culture. And my team is very empathetic. They've been trained to listen very carefully. And by no means do we always get it right. We don't. But we do. We are very intentional about that.
There's intentionality. Your teams have been trained. There are team members and skill sets, a focus on recruiting and matching with the company culture. You've gone through so much. I'm going to ask you to wrap it all up in one specific way. Are you ready? If there was one takeaway that you wanted people to have from listening to this podcast, is how do you build high-performance teams without salaries? What's the one thing you want us to take away on that subject?
So I believe you need to meet everyone on your team where they're at and understand what gets them fired up and motivated every day. And there are team members that are only 100% driven by that dollar sign. And I want my salespeople to be very driven by compensation and commissions. That's right. I'm okay with that. I have found that there's something special and unique about each person on the various teams. For some people, it might be they have a younger family. And so having that flexibility to go to their child's karate practice or event and cut out a little bit early, having that flexibility, that's important to them. I honor that. For another team member, it's they have a passion for international travel. And again, being able to take a block of PTO time and just go and know that during that time, I'm not going to be hitting you constantly and pinging you with emails and questions. Go have a fabulous time. And when you come back, I want to hear about it. And then let's get back to work. And then for some people, it's learning and development. I have team members that, oh, I want to learn this new training. I want to get certified as a coach. I want to learn about this new recruiting technique. Great. I'm going to support your learning and development. And of course, within reason, that's what gets them motivated and excited. So it's always something different. And just taking the time to find out what that something different is. I have an example, and I learned this early on when I was at Michigan. I had a junior talent team member, very junior. She's gone on to do amazing things and her career is thriving. And I didn't have a way to reward her with pay or compensation. And my boss said to me, Kristen, why don't you take her with you on this search trip that you have in Chicago? I was going to meet a high profile candidate that we were considering to bring into the organization. She would love that experience. And she can be part of the interview process. She can help you with all the preparations, have a little bit of fun and show her Chicago while you're at it. It was fantastic. And we did that and we ended up hiring the guy and he was phenomenal and became a great colleague. But that was like, couldn't improve her salary, but just that experience, her level of commitment went through the roof.
Going the extra mile, focusing on them, it could be something personally in their life, giving them just opportunities, recognizing them. These are all the things that mean so much. Obviously, pay does mean something. I think the overall takeaway is there are a lot of different things that we can do. I know people are going to have a lot of questions after this, and would it be appropriate that I gave out maybe a link to your LinkedIn profile so people could reach out?
I love to connect with new colleagues. I'm happy to answer any questions or just have a chat and connect and get introduced. So by all means, absolutely.
Fantastic. Kristen, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all of your insights and having us think differently. We think very much about compensations and salaries and things like that, which we have to. But we should be thinking about the things that go even farther beyond that. And that's got us thinking now in a whole new direction. So thanks for doing that for us today.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.